When you mentioned this podcast, I think you'll hit use the word jokingly, tortured poets, because she uses it, right? And I thought, what does it mean to suffer? What is suffering? How do we understand suffering in a culture where trauma does, to some degree, determine visibility and determine, how much your voice is valorized? Then how do we construct the idea of suffering? And I thought about Osip Mandelstam a lot. I thought about him because there's something so relentlessly hopeful in his poetry, despite the absolute unfairness of the dictatorship that he lived under and of his persecution and of his eventual death in one of Stalin's camps. He had this idea of the Republic of Letters, and Paul Celan meets him in that when he translated Osip Mandelstam. He got this idea for the Message in the Bottle speech, which I think was the Bremen speech, from this idea of the message in the bottle. The poem goes out to the interlocutor, and the interlocutor, you don't know who it is, but if the poem reaches you, it speaks to you. And there's this very private, intimate space, a space of presence and co-presence that is carved out by Mandelstam's poems. And it doesn't deny the personal suffering, but it also, the stake of poetry is very large in it. The stake is we meet in an incredibly fragile space, right? And it's not a stage, it's a private encounter. There's an intimacy. And I think for me, I hope that people have relationships like that with poetry.
Then, going off of that, how do you feel about Taylor taking that tortured poet mentality and putting it onto her own work? What did you think about that as a marketing strategy, as a statement for the album?
I think it's a marketing strategy. And if there's any point at which it could be interesting, we could go back to conversations about the difference between the lyric and music and lyric poetry, right? So there is an interesting historical trajectory here that is actually part of the history of poems and the invention of the lyre, right? Which was that is what it comes from. It was the accompaniment to sort of keep and memorize the mnemonic tool to memorize poems or things that would be recited, histories that would be recited. So we can ask and have interesting conversations about that. The problem is that this is just a marketing tool, right? And from what I understand, it's also involved in something personal that had to do with an ex-boyfriend. And because her fans are so obsessed with her, they know all of those details. They've tracked it down to timelines of who, so we get it in media. We get to find out exactly who it could have been, and there's a fan culture around her. So that's the other question is, when you talk about readership or when you talk about what we're interested in, what is it that draws people to Taylor Swift? And I think that's still a mystery to me. I think that to me is where I'm not a good reader of culture.
Sure. Well, you were a teenage girl once.
I'm thinking of when you came on our main podcast to talk about an Ehrman and Chernapol, poetry is a component of that book. And we talked specifically about how poetry is used in that book. And you said something that I haven't forgotten, which was that every chamber of commerce wants a poet to write the brochure. And the Taylor Swift phenomenon is sort of like the Chamber of Commerce pretending it's a poet a little bit, something like that, and using it as a brand. And I don't know if you listened to the album, but we did listen to it. And on that title track, which references the tortured poets, the poets mentioned, I think they're the only poets mentioned on the album, are Dylan Thomas and Patti Smith. And it's in this kind of like conversational, ironic usage of, well, I don't think that I'm a poet. However, the way that the fans receive her, and I think she encourages the view of herself as a serious artist. She wants to nurture that critical perspective while also juicing the commercial numbers. And it's kind of like this thing where we don't know if it's ironic, we don't know if it's sincere. It's kind of both at the same time as a protective gesture. But there's also a hunger behind it. It's like a need for all things at once without any downsides. I wasn't sure if you had any thoughts on the lyrics specifically or the poets mentioned in the song or the way they were mentioned.
I mean, it's everything that you've said is just, I love it because it makes me think, and I'd forgotten I said that about the Chamber of Commerce. So thank you, Kasia, for remembering. I don't even remember, but it seems true. But also what you said about there's this reluctance to commit, right? So, you know, that is exactly the space that she occupies. And it's the space of pop, right? This was Mark mm-hmm. Fisher's critique of pop. Pop can become anything. Pop can absorb anything. Pop can melt into anything. And there's no critique that pop does, because pop absorbs it. Pop refuses, right? Pop keeps moving. And what happens is, are our tastes formed in relation to this blandness, right? Does it become comfortable to us? I used to joke with my husband because